One of my goals in life was to be accompanied by an all-female rock band, so here we go. Scratch that one off the bucket list. Are you glad to be here today?
Yes!
Turn to someone and say, I'm glad to be here today. Turn to someone else and say, I'm glad you're here because I didn't wear all this green for nothing. And if you didn't wear green, apparently you, like me, didn't get the memo about St. Patrick's Day. Nobody reminded me. Thank you. There you go. I didn't bring my wardrobe aficionado with me to, and apparently she didn't think about that either. She's 12, very here now, not very forward thinking. I am not 12, but I'm also very here and now and not very forward-thinking, so she and I get along splendidly. I have had a wonderful week here in Wembley. I got some South by Southwest time in. That was great. Got some real quiet time here in nature, in this wonderful place. I even got boot whispered. These are my first pair of boots ever. They're very comfortable, but I keep having to tell myself something's not trying to crawl up my leg. It can take some getting used to. My wife said, you've been in Wembley too long. You're buying boots. Come home. I said, no, if I start buying a cowboy hat, then I've been here too long. But it's been wonderful to be here. I said to Ellen, we have to make this at least an annual thing this time every year. I come on back. So last week, I started to talk to you about this thing I call the prosperity intention. And if you remember last week, I talked about how we might look at intention a little differently, not so much as a goal we set or something we put out there, but more of a way of being that we live every single day of our lives in order for us to be drawn more towards a life of fulfillment. And I talked a little bit last week about what fulfillment means. Fulfillment for me is that idea of having all our, let's just say, our core needs met. And when I say core needs, I mean things like peace of mind, things like feeling safe, feeling loved, loving other people, expressing our creativity. And what often happens is that we think the fulfillment happens out here and then we feel it. So we substitute things and actions and whatever and people as what fulfillment is. I'll give you a great example of this. Last summer, I had one of my nephews stay with us from Barbados. And he was 8 years old. His name was Deshaun. And bravest little boy I ever knew got on a plane all by himself to fly up to stay with us in D.C. Now, he had to go to New York because they only allow minors to fly, you know, if it's a direct flight, someone's waiting at the other end. So he flew up to New York. So we had to go to New York to get him. So my daughter Joy and I, we got in my car, and we drove up to New York, got tons of family in New York, stayed one night, picked him up, and then we were driving on back. As I was getting on the New Jersey Turnpike at about 80 miles an hour, my transmission gave out on the car. Now, as luck, providence, good grace would have it, I happened to roll to a stop right behind a cop car who was giving somebody else a ticket, better them than me, and he called me a tow truck, take the truck to the shop, and after about an hour of looking at the car, he said, you're going to need a new transmission, and here's what it will cost. So I got on my phone, I looked up what my car was worth and what the transmission cost, and there wasn't a whole lot of difference. But it had never occurred to me not to get the new transmission because this was my car, this was my baby, this was my refuge, this was my sanctuary, this was where I went to escape, this was where I went to crank the music up as loud as I wanted to, nobody could tell me otherwise, this was how I got from point A to point B, this was my car. So I called my wife and I said, hey, so here's what happened. And we might be a little longer. We might have to stay overnight because we got to get this new transmission and put it in, and et cetera, et cetera. And there was dead silence on the phone. And she says, don't you think it's about time you might want to let that car go? And it was like someone just uppercut me right here in the gut. I was like, no. Because that's my sanctuary. That's my escape. That's where I crank the music up as loud as I can. That's where I get from point A to point B. What? No, I can't. And I went just into this place of despair. A few minutes later, given the fact that I've cultivated this practice of self-observation and self-awareness, I said to myself, what just happened? Why did I have such a strong emotional response to releasing an engine on four wheels? Why? Because all those things, the freedom, the peace, the sanctuary, the things that I equated with fulfillment, I had placed squarely on the responsibility of my car, and now it was being taken away. So for just a few minutes, I thought, well, there went those things too. But I had to realize that those feelings of fulfillment, I could get any time, anywhere, anyhow. Doesn't matter. The fulfillment comes first. It's a great quote by, let's see if I can find it. Here we go. John Randolph Price. He wrote a bestseller called The Abundance Book. And it's been around for a long time. I think it's out of print, but you can still scrape it up on the internet somewhere. And he says, when I'm aware of the God self within me as my total fulfillment, I am totally fulfilled. In other words, fulfillment comes first. It's the first cause, if you will. To get yourself in a place where you can be that, live that, feel that, then the things in your life will drop into place to support that. The fulfillment comes first. So last week we talked about how do we get ourselves into that place of just living from that every single day and every single moment. And the first thing I shared with you last week was that idea of declaring our Christhood, acknowledging, affirming, just realizing that the fullness of God, the fullness of the universe is fully present at the point of who you are. You know, in Unity, we talk a lot about God within us. I got a little problem with that. There's a great saying, a great Hindu story, when the gods were looking to hide man's divinity from him. And they wanted to put it on the top of the mountain in the deepest river. And Brahman, the chief Hindu god, said, no, we're going to put it within man, because man would never think to look there. So we have this idea that our divinity is within us. But sometimes we get a little caught up on that word within. And we think that it's like some little magic jewel or orb hidden in our soul somewhere that we have to go find. That is still something that's not quite us. It is in us. It's in a location. You know, it's a bit of a misnomer. What it's really saying as it is in within us, as it is in us. It is us. It is the entirety of who we are, as well as this physical being that breathes and eats and drinks. We are also this fully spiritual realization of the entire universe. One of my favorite music groups is called the Brand New Heavies. They're like a acid jazz funk group from England. They have the song called You Are the Universe. And my favorite line, it says, you are the universe, there's nothing you can't be. You are the universe, there is nothing you can't be. So that's the first stage. I call it declaring our Christhood. The second one out of the five, and I promised you four today, I realize I kind of spoke about number two last week, but I didn't tell you, so I'm going to clear it up now. Number two is called unshakable faith. Say unshakable faith.
Unshakable faith.
That's living in that place where your default response to anything that happens, or even anything that doesn't happen, is that sense of remembering that there are spiritual laws in this universe that work for your good and you will be taken care of. And everything will fall into place. And everything and anything you need will be there at the point of your want, not before or not after. Now, usually when I say this to people, there's inevitably someone who comes up to me after service and said, so what are you saying? We shouldn't save for a rainy day? And like I told you last week, you can save for a rainy day. That's okay. But there's not going to be a second great flood. You don't have to be like Noah and build an ark and stockpile it for the journey. It's okay to save, but why are you saving? What's the intention behind it? Is it saving because you know there are things in life that you're going to want to experience, and you're saving from a place of wanting to be able to give to others and share the wealth? Are you saving from a place of fear, from a place of lack, from a place of doubt? Every once in a while, I come across a quote that makes me angry. And it makes me angry because, of course, it's speaking to the truth, or it's speaking to the fears that I have. There's a Christian mystic, Thomas Merton, and he says, anxiety is a mark of spiritual insecurity. Anxiety is a mark of spiritual insecurity. And when I first read that, I got upset. How dare he reach from the grave hundreds of years in the past and dare tell me this? But he was right. And it caused me to take a good look at myself. Why was I having certain anxieties in life? Why? Because on some level, still deep down, I didn't really buy into this. I didn't really embrace it. I didn't really take it on as the truth of my being. And even now, sometimes, I'm still a work in progress. Still a work in progress. I want to go back to the fair thinking. Why? Because I've got all these embedded thoughts, all these habits in idiosyncrasies, ways of thinking that I picked up, that we all pick up from the time we were about yay high. It's how we've learned to be with the world. It's how our ego has developed to protect us. You know, but sometimes when you build a wall, are you keeping others out or are you keeping yourself in? So we get to take a look at these sometimes. And this is what unshakable faith is about. The third one is forgiveness. Now, forgiveness, I could do a whole four-week series on forgiveness. I mean, that's just the whole thing that goes on and on and on. But I'll say this about forgiveness and why it's really, really important. Forgiveness is that process of chipping away at the resentments that have built up over our heart, piece by piece, over time. This is what forgiveness is. You've heard a lot about forgiveness. It's not forgetting. No, it's not. Forgiveness is quite the opposite. Forgiveness, for me, is the ability to remember. And when we remember, we can give a little bit of love instead of absorbing resentment. Giving love rather than absorbing resentment. Because resentment is like a rock slide that has fallen into the river and is damming it, and the flow is blocked. And when our flow in the universe is blocked, then our life becomes congested. And all of a sudden, there's so much to do. There's so many things to do. Things aren't falling into place. We aren't waking up happy. We aren't going to bed feeling like we had a good day. This is what that congestion is. And what forgiveness really does is, piece by piece, pull away those little pebbles until flow is established. And if you are ever wondering what you need to forgive, I think you all know, but just in case you're wondering what you ever need to forgive, watch yourselves. And if you ever find yourselves in that moment when you've either stopped because you weren't going to say something nice, avoided a person, refused to pick up the phone when you saw what the caller ID said. Or like me, who believes Freud had it right, you blame your mother for everything. My mother happens to be in Brazil right now. She went to visit my brother who lives there. And this is kind of telling about how my brother and myself have responded to our mom. We probably both live equidistantly at other parts of the world away from her. And we think about it, it's actually kind of a sad thing, because this is how we coped with what we thought was a less than loving upbringing. What I've come to realize is she was doing the best she knew how to do. So we fled. So she went to visit him for 3 weeks because him and his wife just had their first baby a few months ago. And she goes to visit her new grandchild. And 3 weeks, and the day before she's supposed to leave, she takes ill suddenly. And she doesn't leave. Long story short, the jury is still out exactly as to what happened. But let's just say her three-week vacation is now on week 7. And she's still in Brazil. I say to my brother, I was Skyping with him, you win the Son of the Year award. Are you ready for her to go yet? He said, I was ready 2 weeks ago. But she's still here. During this time, this past 7 weeks, she's been in Brazil, especially the last 4 of this extra time. She and I have spoken more via Skype than we probably have in the last 4 years combined. It's been a stretch for me. Why? Because I'm still working on this perceived wrong, underlying the perceived part, wrong, that I believe was inflicted on me in the way she was parenting me. And even though I realized, you know what? I could see the value and the wisdom in what she was attempting to do. Delivery might have needed some work, but I see it now. And I see that ultimately she was coming from a place of love and ultimately was coming from a place of wanting me to be the best person that I could be. And even so, there's still about 20-something years of blockage built up that I've only started to work on in the last 10. Forgiveness is a process that unfortunately never ends. But in the process of doing it, we open up ourselves. We open up ourselves to a freedom that we didn't know really existed before we started. Sometimes we may not even have realized that we were in, for lack of a better term, bondage to this resentment until we start the forgiveness process. And when we can be that free, there is room for other things to take its place, other than that resentment that we've been holding on to. So we've declared our Christhood. We've stepped into unshakable faith. We've started the process of forgiveness. And the fourth one now is gratitude. To give thanks for what is already here. Someone mentioned about my daughter not being around to dress me. That's why I'm not in green today. If you weren't here last week and you missed that story about my daughter, 12, being really my wardrobe aficionado and making sure I'm matching, that it's only when I began to give thanks, really give thanks, for her being who she is that I realized I had this gift in front of me. You know, she says some of the most amazing things that, you know, they're almost throwaway statements for her, but they're seated in such wisdom that we can all learn from them. Just the other day we were sitting and I forgot what we were talking about, but there was something about being nice and giving things. And my daughter says, you know that nice feeling that you get when you do something good for somebody? Yeah, I don't get that. So, of course, we alarmed a little bit. And we said, then why do you do nice things for other people? And she goes, because more often than not, the nice thing is the right thing. I like that. I like that. So here's this little gift of wisdom that's been planted in my life that I get to daily express gratitude for, even in the moments of struggle, of please clean your room, please finish your homework, please do the chores, please put the dishes in the dishwasher. The litany of lists of things go on. Why are we watching TV now? You're not supposed to be watching TV. We can go on and on and on. But gratitude in the midst of these things is what allows you to see the gift and the blessing that is in front of you. A great practice for this is a gratitude journal. This may be not new news to some of you, but the idea of the gratitude journal is, of course, every day you find, five, six, seven things that you can be grateful for. And you write them down. And some days you're going to realize it's hard to find five or six things to be grateful for. I'll admit it, some days it's hard. But I can guarantee you, and I don't guarantee much in life, but I can guarantee you that you will feel better about yourself at the end of making a gratitude journal entry than when you started. There is much in life to be grateful for. And when we are grateful for what we have currently in our life, things tend to multiply the things that we are grateful for. If you read in the Gospels, when Jesus performed the miracle of feeding the 5,000, what was the first thing he did? He thanked God for what was there, this small gift. Now, we can argue back and forth of whether that did that really happen or did it. There's a lot of biblical scholarship that explained that miracle. I don't want to take the magic away from anyone. But even the real explanation of what that miracle was in itself a miracle. Because in those days when people made long journeys, there was no refrigeration. There was no food truck trailing behind the crowd. People had to pack up their food with them for the entire journey. And as custom would have it, if you shared your food with someone else, well, then you may not make it back home because you packed enough to go. So the possibility was that here are all these people sitting around, and it was kind of a spontaneous gathering. Some people probably didn't think they were going to make the trip. So here they are sitting around. It's time to eat, and folks are saying, well, I only got enough to get me so far. I'm not gonna give. And here was this little boy who said, hey, I am willing to share. And I really think that, again, just like the wisdom of my daughter, the wisdom and the generosity and the gratitude of this little boy was an inspiration for the others to say, well, I bought 3 loaves of bread for the trip. I might make do with 2. Here, have one. And all of a sudden, this massive amount of sharing took place. And therein was the real miracle, that people were willing to step out of what they always did. They were willing to step outside of their own thoughts of self-preservation to say, I'm willing to share. When we give thanks, amazing things happen. And finally, the fifth state of being is to give. I just talked a little bit about what happens when we give, but when we give, not only do we increase our flow, not only do we create room for more to come to us, but when we give, we are transformed on a personal and a soul level. Something happens when we give, especially when we give and we can be with the recipient of our gift, and we see them light up, and we see them be in a place of just being humble and transformed by your gift. Something happens to us. I'll tell you what happens to us. Our soul opens up just a little bit more, and we're able to connect. And what do you give? You give anything. It doesn't matter. If you got money, give it. If you got time, give it. You got extra cars, give them. Lend them to people. Thank you, by the way, Sherry and David. They lent me a car, and I was able to get to Enchanted Rock during the week. Had to wait 2 hours to get in, but it was so worth it. It was so worth it to be in that place. We always have something we can give. When we give of ourselves, we grow ourselves. And we can give ourselves with the time to serve. Martin Luther King has a great quote on service. He says this, "Everybody can be great because anybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to make your subject and verb agree to serve. You only need a heart full of grace and a soul generated by love." A heart full of grace and a soul generated by love. And each and every one of you has that. Why? Because each and every one of you is a divine expression of the one power and the one presence walking on earth. So you have a heart full of grace. We just get to remember that in every single moment of every day. So what I want to invite you into is this, a 21-day practice. Now, if you're coming to my workshop this afternoon, you're going to get one of these booklets, so don't get one after service. But if you're not, I'm going to invite you to come by the table and get one of these booklets for any love offering you choose to share. Remember that thing I said about giving, right? Just check it. And basically what I've done in here is expand on some of the thoughts I've shared. But there's also kind of like space to journal. And for 21 days, I'm going to invite you into the experience of observing yourself, being with yourself, and asking, how can I be an expression in each of these five states of being? How can I step into them? How every day can I be clear in some way to declare my Christhood, to show unshakable faith, to forgive, to be grateful for what's in front of me, and to give? How can I do that every single day? Because I believe and have experienced that when you live life from each of these places, you will draw to you. You will draw to you fulfillment. And it may not look like the way you expected it, but it will be real. Ellen mentioned I was a music therapist. When I started my undergrad studies in music, we had to declare a major instrument. Mine was classical piano. I've been playing classical piano since I was 8. But we also had to declare a minor instrument as well. Singing, not my thing. And I wasn't going to be playing any wind instruments. I hadn't reached that point where you play them long enough and you build lung capacity so you don't get giddy and pass out. Hadn't been there yet. So I found a loophole, as is my tendency. I found a loophole. I could declare a jazz piano minor. Same instrument, but a whole different field of study. There was resistance at first because no one had ever done this, but there was no reason why I couldn't. I think they changed the rule after me, but that's a whole other story. So here he was, his jazz piano minor, and I'd taken very little jazz studies before, so we started on our studies together. It became abundantly clear very soon afterwards that I was not going to be the next Herbie Hancock. It's evidently clear. Because there was one thing that I did not like to do, which is fatal for any musician, and that is to practice. I was not a fan of practicing. And I thought, I'm playing jazz. I don't need to practice. I just need to sit and make beautiful music. Could never have been more wrong. There were more scales than I'd ever seen before in my entire life. And I had to practice them for hours. But I didn't like to do it. But in spite of that, I seemed to have this fanciful idea that one day, just maybe one day, I'd get around to doing all the practicing, and one day I'd be maybe walking into, you know, some bar or some restaurant, and there'd be some, you know, jazz great there, and he'd recognize me and say, "Hey, Hogan, come sit in and jam with me," and we'd jam together, and it'd be lots of fun. I used to have these crazy images in my mind. By the time I graduated, I was clear that's not going to happen because I barely made it through passing my jazz piano studies. Looking back now, I realized that what I had really done for myself was kind of create this almost desire and intention of wanting to express my creativity in a fun way. Sometimes we mistake desire for intentions. Desires are really that how we think we want that intention to express. And sometimes we get so attached to the desire that we miss out on a lot of other good. But I put it out there to the universe and moved on. A couple years later, while I was in ministerial school in Kansas City, a friend of ours gave us two tickets to go see Chick Corea. How many of you know who Chick Corea is? All right, good. So this story will really make sense. Chick Corea, probably one of the greatest jazz piano players still alive. Played with Miles Davis. He played with them all. And he was performing in Kansas City, and he was doing what he was referring to as an improv concert, which I realized was code for, I don't have a playlist, I don't have a set list, I'm just going to sit at the piano and do whatever comes to me. But when you're Chick Corea, you can get away with that. So here we go, we're at this concert, front row seats to see Chick Corea play. And at one point in the concert, he says, improvising is kind of like painting a portrait. I'm sure the musicians will agree with me here. It's kind of like painting a portrait. You start off with an idea in mind, and then it kind of takes over and becomes a thing all of itself on its own. He said, I'm not a painter. I'm an improviser of music. So what I would like to do is improvise a portrait of someone who would be willing to come on stage and sit at the piano while I improvise their portrait. Well, of course, you know my hand shot up in the air. It might have been the three rum and cokes I had earlier, but as my wife, in hushed stage whispers, put your hand down, I said no. One of the world's greatest jazz piano players has just invited someone to step on stage. I'm going to answer that call. So I walk on stage. I sat at in the crook of the piano in the chair that was placed there, and he started playing. He was very intuitive. It was a nice, funky Caribbean rhythm. I don't know how what said in me Caribbean, but he picked it up, and there he was playing. Again, it might have been the rum and cokes, but I felt very emboldened in that moment. And sitting next to Chick Corea was a tray of small percussion instruments that had been hidden from audience sightline. He'd never touched them before, but they were there. So in my boldness and exuberance of seizing the moment, I stood up and walked over and pointed to the instruments as if to say, may I join you? For some bizarre reason, he thought I was asking to play piano with him, so he scooted over and gestured for me to sit next to him. There was a definite throughout the audience as I sat next to the greatest living piano legend there was. My jazz piano skills compared to his was like the size of this pinky fingernail compared to the room in the sanctuary. But it didn't matter. For what felt like an eternity, I plunked a few notes, and he plunked a few notes, and we interplayed with each other. It maybe lasted 5 seconds, but it was the highlight of my life. It was me getting to share the stage with a piano great. We came to a close. I stood up. There was deafening applause. He asked, who's next? And about 80 hands shot up in the air. The point of that story is when you put things out there, they will come to you in some way, shape, or form. But the question is, why are you putting them out there? And with what intention are you putting them out there? Because I believe those are the two factors that will determine the quality of what comes to you. So my invitation for you this week, next week, maybe until you see me again next year, is to step into that prosperity intention of declaring the fullness of the God that you are, of stepping into forgiveness and unshakable faith, to give recklessly and without abandon, and finally, to open your hearts and be grateful for each and everything and every person that is in your life. This, I believe, is the key to transforming ourselves. This is the key to true fulfillment. Let's take a moment to meditate. I invite you to perhaps place both feet on the floor, hands gently in your lap, and simply breathe. As distracting thoughts and sounds may enter your awareness, don't resist them. Just simply and gently return your attention to your breath. Allow your breath to take you into a deeper silence of your being. And in this silence, I invite you to be willing to hear what is yours to forgive, to realize what is yours to demonstrate in faith, to surrender, to your all-powerful oneness as God. We are one with all that is. We are all that is. We are a life fulfilled. Let us take these thoughts into the deep, sweet silence of our being. We are one with all that is. We are a life fulfilled.
So as you return your full awareness to this time and this place, go forth and let your lives be an expression of that truth, that there is one power, there is one presence. It is God, it is good, it is omnipotent, it is abundant, and it is us. And so it is. Namaste.